Welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, folks, this is a podcast first. Yes, I'm reporting to you live from one of those pods, you know, like the Delta Sky Club that are soundproof. So I'm hoping that the folks on either side of me are not hearing this podcast record. Rex, you're also, for those who are following along on YouTube, not in your usual position as well. Would you like to explain why?
Bit of a disaster zone my house is right now. We got some construction going on inside, so it's probably best. There's some, the flooring guys are in there right now. They could be a little on the loud side, so I'm going to go with this. If you noticed this morning on Golf Today, we did a round table. I had to go to a neighbor's house because it was so loud and crazy in my house to actually do TV. So this is my lovely back porch.
That was 3 weeks for you on the road. You came home to a disaster zone. Luckily, you're leaving on Sunday. You and I are going to be co-hosting Golf Today next week, which is, of course, the Scottish Open. And then you'll be departing for the Open Championships. You'll be gone for, I don't know, another 2.5 weeks at that point. So hopefully by that point, by the end of July, you've actually made some significant progress on what your home looks like. The reason why I'm in this wonderful pod, again, soundproof, that I'm hoping, because we just wrapped up the Travelers Championship on Monday. If you were looking for a Sunday night pod, if you were looking for made for TV edition at 9 a.m. on Monday, you did not find us. In fact, you saw the sudden death playoff between Scottie Scheffler and Victor Hovland. I appeared on Gary Williams' Five Clubs, and I was stoked, Rex, for the playoff. Probably the most excited I had been for overtime in a PGA Tour event since, remember, last year's Players' Championship, the three-hole playoff between Rory McIlroy and J.J. Spaun. Like, I was absolutely amped driving to the golf course at TPC Sawgrass. And though I was miffed, Rex, that this Travelers' Championship went into an extra day, and most certainly my wife was miffed after 2 weeks away with the kids, I was excited for this one, and all it lasted was 12 or 13 minutes. What a reversal of fortunes. What a turn of events here at TPC River Highlands.
I feel like you're being disingenuous. Should I start reading through the text that you sent last night as this thing was getting closer and closer to a Monday finish? Shall we revisit that, or we just move on? Let's just move on.
I'm catching it from all sides. I'm happy to be on my way back home, and I'm glad that the Travelers Championship wrapped up with a pretty exciting finish. Let's just leave it at that, shall we?
I'm kind of with you. I'm in the comforts of my own home, at least the back porch of my own home, and I was looking forward to this morning's playoff as well. You and I were going to do, if we did last night's podcast, we talked about doing some signature event superlatives, and one of the things I was going to point out is that, by and large, the signature events, and this was the last one of the season, delivered, and none more so than the Travelers Championship with this playoff, with these names that were in the mix. You had Colin Morikawa, who was in the mix until the very end. You, of course, had Victor Hovland, who resurfaced after who knows what. You had Scottie Scheffler finally being Scottie Scheffler after all of this time. I think it was very compelling. The one part that I was most disappointed in over the course of the week, I thought for sure you were going to pull this off, and you never even tried it from what my understanding is in the reporting that I did. You never joined the Norse. The Norwegian fans who were out there in full force supporting their man, Victor Hovland, for the row. I wanted to see you doing the row. It would have made such perfect TV. It's quite the letdown.
I mean, I was a capital J journalist doing very important, serious reports on the Travelers Championship. Again, as you mentioned, the final signature event of the PGA Tour season. That would have been a lot of fun. We did have a road show this past week, so it was Rich. It was brand new. We had some fun going back and forth with the desk as well, but it was a split week, Rex. So we also had the KPMG Women's PGA that was going on as well. So we did not have the usual hour-long pre- and post-game shows. Had we, I think most certainly super producer Harris Chang and Brett Castellanos would have put us in there, would have certainly had me do that. Although I could not understand what they were doing, it certainly added to the theatrics and it certainly added to the fun.
It's the row. It's a very famous chant, cheer, whatever you want to call it.
Who knew? Victor Hovland said on Saturday night he'd never seen it before. He had no idea that this was happening. Apparently it just started at the World Cup game. So the Norwegians had hung around because they were playing, I think, on Friday or Saturday in Boston. And now they're going to be playing Tuesday in Dallas. So I love the atmosphere. I loved the energy, which leads me to my other point, Rex. This was, in full disclosure, the first time I had ever covered the Travelers Championship. I completely understand it now. I understand why it is a player favorite. I understand why, with the exception of Roy McIlroy, every top player signs up for the Travelers Championship, even after what is a pretty exhausting, even what after is a pretty grueling week at the U.S. Open. It's the perfect debrief. They're treated like kings. The caddies are treated well. The food's incredible. The golf course is a really easy walk. It's a lot of fun. The community support is incredible. The energy all week I thought was off the charts. I made the point a couple of times that if you're the PGA Tour and you're looking at what like the championship series should look like, if you could make 15 Travelers Championships, you have the best possible product for the PGA Tour. It just felt bigger than just a regular season event on tour. And I thought that was really cool. And I completely understand the buzz and I completely understand the craze now as it relates to the Travelers.
I feel like we probably had this exact same conversation on Wednesday of RBC Heritage Week. And Hilton Head is the exact same feel of what you just described. Number one, it's such a refreshing feel to go to an island the week after the Masters. It's so intense. And they take such good care of the players, just like you just said, and the caddies and everything about it. And they've done it in what is a really small community in Hilton Head and Hartford. And even though we've talked a lot about the idea that Brian Rolapp, the CEO of the PGA Tour, and his executives want to go to major markets, the fact they're only in four of the top 10 major media markets in the United States is an issue for them. These executives will also tell you that, look, whatever it is they've created in Hartford, in Hilton Head, I would put Scottsdale in that category as well, even though that's a major market. Whatever it is they've created there, we'd like to replicate that about 20 times over the course of the season. And I think everybody hears them talking about wanting to go to these major markets, and the idea of going to New York or going to Chicago sounds great in theory. The PGA Tour has tried that in the past, and they haven't been able to create what you have in these smaller markets. So it will be interesting to see how they try to replicate this going forward.
Yeah, I think like anything, it's a mix. It's a blend. You wouldn't want to have 15 Hartfords, just like you wouldn't want to have 15 mega markets like a LA or a Miami. I think as it relates to with the schedule and sort of the week after a major championship, I was one who poo-pooed it. I thought that the PGA Tour should use a break the week after Masters. Talking to some PGA Tour executives this week, they actually liked the idea, at least sometimes, of having a big event after a major championship, because you have the buzz, you have the attention, you have the momentum. Why not continue the conversation into a big PGA Tour event? That's not to say we should have four quote unquote signature events following major championships, but I do think there's room for a Harbor Town after the Masters. I do think there's room for a Travelers after the US Open. It might be a little bit different story next year when you have the US Open at Pebble Beach and them flying all the way across the country to host an event in Hartford. I understand that logistically could be a little bit challenged, but I like that blend, and I think it certainly works well for the Travelers Championship. Just like Harbor Town, Rex, ironically enough, this was a playoff loss for Scottie Scheffler. Let's actually get into the final round in sort of the sudden death playoff on Monday, because it was a very interesting week. We were on high alert on Friday afternoon with Scottie Scheffler nearly shooting 58 or 59, ended up settling for a 60. Funny story, I have one of these whoops, which I've been made fun of actually on this podcast a couple of times in the comments section. I got an alert from Whoop on that Friday afternoon that said, "Nice workout. That was a long hour-long strain. Why don't you take it easy for the rest of the day?" The ironic thing, folks, was that I was not working out. In fact, I was just sitting on a little interview perch, waiting, wondering, and then interviewing Scottie Scheffler about his close call at shooting the second sub 60 round. He's becoming the second player to shoot a sub 60 round the PGA Tour, joining ironically Jim Furyk, who was in the booth and on the call for the Travelers Championships. It was a really exciting Friday. What did you think overall of the way that Scottie played? Not just obviously coming close to shooting 59, but sort of the weekend as well, which ultimately finished one shot shy.
Whoop, must have been so confused. What do you mean you're not working out? Then go see a doctor immediately. Dial 911.
What's wrong with you? I had 160 BPMs.
That's about, I do like, I know it's an advertising activation. However, I think the Whoop thing that they do, specifically on NBC broadcast, I think is so cool, simply because I've always been curious about those players when they're in the heat of the moment. How are they feeling that pressure? And sometimes it's like, well, they're not feeling anything. Like, yep, Cam Young does not have a pulse. And then sometimes I saw Ben Griffin hitting this really tricky shot out of the bunker. And he was like up to 120 and you're like, oh, he's feeling this. I think it's a pretty cool addition. I think Scottie is interesting. And again, we went round and round about this morning on Golf Today on the round table. The idea that he did the one thing that had been missing all season long, and that's get off to a good start. He opened with a 64. That is his best opening round since, no big shock, the American Express, where he opened the season, where he won for the only time so far this season. That was one of those stats that you and I both try to drill down into and try to explain that, okay, this is what's wrong with Scottie Scheffler, or his proximity to the hole, or his ball striking or his lag putting or whatever the case we might be to come up with. And I just think statistically, at least me personally, I feel like I've come up empty trying to come up with a specific reason about what is exactly wrong this time of year. Because you look at the way he played, and he told you this after the round. It was a good interview that you did. But he's going to walk away knowing that, okay, I hit the ball much better than I have recently. And my ball striking was very good. I think he's going to walk away very disappointed because he had, I would say, at least three opportunities to win this event. The birdie putt on 17, now granted, that was not an easy putt, but you lip it out, you knew what he was doing right there. And he was inside of Victor Hovland on the playoff hole. I think all of us were anticipating, yep, this is going to go another hole. There's no way he misses this. And it just seems like it's another example of this season of just being such fractionally off that can't deliver.
It reminds me, Rex, of 2023, where he only won twice, only won twice on the PGA Tour, and he was just fractionally off. And we were all searching for answers of how has he not been able to follow up the four-win season that he had in 2022. And it really came down to variance. It came down to situationally. It came down to just sort of one or two shots that went the other way. Maybe it's a lip out. Maybe it's a misread. Maybe it's bad speed control. I think there's a lot of progress that Scottie Scheffler made at the Travelers Championship. You mentioned the hot start. That's one thing that we're not going to have to talk about with Scottie Scheffler at the Scottish or the Open Championship. He sort of put that to bed, put himself in good position at the halfway point, shot 60, had the 36-hole lead. It was only the fourth time in 14 chances heading into the weekend in a PGA Tour event that he'd been within six shots of a lead, Rex. So he was no longer chasing. He was no longer in sort of high pursuit over the weekend. Yeah, on the weekend, maybe his putter went a little bit cold. He certainly missed more fairways on the weekend than he did in the first two rounds combined. But I thought overall, when you sort of step back and look at it, being able to put himself in a position to even force overtime, I thought was a credit to Scottie Scheffler. He made three huge par putts on Sunday evening on rain-softened greens where you're a little bit skeptical or dubious or uncertain of what the speed was going to be. For him to be able to hold those three eight-foot putts just to force overtime, I thought was a huge stride. And look, he didn't do anything wrong necessarily in the playoff hole. He striped his drive down 18, which is something that he had not done previously the first couple days. First couple days, he put it in the left bunker that certainly, I think, harmed his chances of shooting 59. In the final hole of regulation, blew it wide right onto the right bank, actually did well from 180 yards just to hit it inside 30 feet, was probably aided certainly by the greens being softer and more receptive. So he absolutely nutted his drive on 18 in the playoff, hit it to 4 feet, actually shot link at the time, called it 2.5 feet, which was mind-boggling to me. There's no way that was a 2.5 footer. It was 4 feet. It was a lot of break, actually playing it outside the hole and just hit it too hard. We saw that happen on 18 on Saturday when they had the birdie bogey switch with Victor Hovland in the third round that ultimately had him cough up the 54-hole lead. And we saw it again on Sunday night when he needed to get two putts, race it 8 feet by, and ended up holding that one, had punctuated it with a fist bump. So speed control on the 18th green in particular was a little bit off for Scottie Scheffler. But I think overall, his ball striking was the cleanest it had been to date. At least statistically, it was in terms of his strokes gained approach. I think he can feel pretty good about where the state of his game is heading into the year's final major. That's a long way, Rex. About 14 minutes before we even get to the winner, Victor Hovland. I thought he was incredible, and it was something that we had not seen Victor Hovland do for the majority of 2026. This reminded me instantly of 2023, the confidence, the fearlessness, the clutch putting, being able to stand toe-to-toe with Scottie Scheffler, the number one player in the world, and take him down. It was a classic match play moment. It was great theater. It was great on Sunday night, and it was great, even though it was short-lived, on Monday as well.
And I think when he wasn't perfect all day long by any stretch of imagination. He got off to an awful start. He's two over through his first eight holes against the world number one. You would have thought that's a pretty easy formula to play your way out of that tournament very quickly, Scotty to walk away from the field. And that simply didn't happen. And you're right. Eamon Lynch brought this up, and I tend to agree with him. He is one of the most fascinating players to me on the PGA Tour because of how thoughtful he is, because of how he continues to look for answers. He's always trying to drill down and to figure out. He doesn't want to know why the ball went this way. He wants to know exactly how to keep it from going that way. He wants to know the science and the mechanics to it. And he keeps searching for all of these different things, maybe sometimes to his detriment. I think you could make an argument on that front. But he is clearly still just a world-class talent. And you're right. You saw that. You saw what he was towards the end of that season when he won the Hero World Challenge. And you could make an argument that over the last 4 or 5 months of the season, he was the hottest player on the planet, regardless at the world rank, what the world ranking said. And again, such a fascinating player to cover, such a fascinating player to write about, because the last time he won, which would have been last year in Tampa, and I quote, with a disgusting game. And so you would think with this time around, he'd be a little bit more happy with where he is right now. He'd be a little bit more comfortable. You look at his finishes coming into this event. It's not as though he was finishing back of the pack, but you just know the wheels are always turning with this particular player.
I mean, we're not supposed to root. We're supposed to be impartial. We're supposed to be unbiased.
Capital J. Capital J, you said it.
I don't know how you can't root for Victor Hovland, who, in my opinion, might just be the most likable player on the PGA Tour. And the reason why I think he's such an easy player to root for is that he is just brutally honest. There's no sugarcoating. He's not looking to necessarily spin anything positively. If you ask him a question about the state of his game, he is going to tell you. And even in the winner's interview that I had with him on the 18th green, he called some of his play so far in 2026 embarrassing. And it was in particular with his driving. And if you remember back to 2023, you mentioned the Hero World Challenge. Forget about the Hero World Challenge. How about what he did in the FedEx
Tour
Cup
Championship.
Playoff? How about what he did at the Tour Championship? How about what he did at the Ryder Cup? He was the best player on the golf course. What he did at that period, Rex, was he was a top 10 driver of the golf ball. And he just hit that bullet fade over and over and over again. And the reason why he had so much confidence in this game, because he saw the window that he wanted to hit it out of. He wanted to start it left and bleed it right with some scoot in the fairways, and he was able to pull it off each and every time. Stacking those shots, the repeatability of it, was what really gave him confidence. Why he ended up going in a different direction from that point, I still don't think we have a great answer, and Victor Hovland's been trying to rediscover it himself. But that is sort of his process and what he's been driven by over the past 3 years. He's looking for the ability to have these shots that he's envisioning and then pulling them off. And over the course of the week at the Travelers Championship, we saw that self-belief continue to grow. And look, he'd shown flashes over the past couple weeks. We finished third at the event that you were up in Canada, drove it better than he had all season to that point. I was actually out following him at the US Open. Coincidentally, I think he was playing with Wyndham Clark over the first couple days. But anyway, I was on the 12th hole. Wind was pumping left to right. He blows it miles right, ends up making double on that hole, and that doomed his chances, and that's why he missed the cut. What happened, though, Rex, on the weekend at the U.S. Open, that even though he'd missed the cut, he did not skip town early. Victor Hovland stayed in the range for 5 hours on the weekend and hit 312 balls, according to the USGA's range tracker data. This was a player who knew that he was on the right track, and he was looking for some validation, and he was looking to ingrain those swing feels. He came to TPC River Highlands and it hit it better than he had all season. Again, a player who was outside the top 100 in strokes gained off the tee, finished the week first in Hartford. Absolutely striping it off the tee, full confidence, not just with the driver, but the three wood and the hybrid as well. No, he was not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. Made four bogeys in the first 10 holes in the final round. He missed two putts inside 4 feet. He admitted that he was a little bit nervous, a little bit anxious as he was approaching some of those putts, which is sort of his tendency. But the way that he played, some of the clutch up and downs to stay in the mix, and again, the way that he continually put the ball in the fairway to apply pressure to Scottie Scheffler, it was vintage Victor Hovland, and it's great to see him having the renaissance that he is now.
And he is the type of player that you want to see on top of a leaderboard, specifically at these types of events, even though, as we've pointed out, he hasn't won in over a year on the PGA Tour. Him being in that final pairing, on Saturday as well, made that event special. Like, it was always going to be special. You've learned it. I think a lot of people who go to Hartford realize that, oh, they've tapped into something cool here. But having those two coming down the stretch and the supporting cast around him, we haven't even talked about Colin Morikawa and the way he finished in just awful weather. How'd your rain suit hold up, by the way?
Pitifully. In fact, we should not be knocking a sponsor, but I do thank you for asking.
Knocking anyone. No, I was just asking. It looked like it was just pouring down sideways.
It really was an incredible shot by Colin Morikawa in the 72nd hole to get into the clubhouse, shooting 61. I thought the shot of the tournament was going to be Scotty Scheffler second into 13, the par five. It was absolutely dumping, and he pulled a 3-iron out from 235 yards and hit it to about 4 feet, two-putter for birdie for what I thought was going to be the eventual go-ahead birdie. Ended up getting a little bit more theatrical after that point as related to Scotty Scheffler and Victor Hovland's rally. But yeah, the Colin Morikawa round was great, even though he still says he's dealing with some of the back issues. It was such a fun Sunday bleeding into Monday with a lot of great golf, a lot of great theater, the energy. But it's great to see Victor Hovland at this point. And again, I asked him afterward, I said, you know, it's been a mentally challenging 3 years for you. Will you give yourself a little bit of grace now? Will you be sort of not your worst enemy anymore, but sort of your best friend? He says, I hope so. If this can't pull me out of it, I'm not sure what will. But being able to knock off Scotty Scheffler, the world number one, who is maybe not in tip top form, but certainly very good form, to beat him head to head in that setting with the fan support on that golf course, which has a lot of penal shots. You have to step up and hit good shots, or you could be potentially going out of bounds or in the water, whatever the case may be. Thick rough, certainly. I think it's a huge confidence boost for Victor Hovland as we move to the rest of the PGA Tour season. That is a bow, Rex, on the signature events for 2026. Those will be blown up entirely in 2028 as we're expanding to essentially 15 of them on the PGA Tour. But as we put a bow on this part of the PGA Tour schedule, how do you think they worked this year and sort of the winners that we saw?
I think if you go down the list of accolades that you would hand out, I love the mix of star players versus players, maybe the Jacob Bridgmans that we didn't know, or the Chris Raitens that we didn't know. I was in Charlotte for that win. It was interesting to see him win. Probably not exactly what you sign on to for a signature event, but I think that's the beauty of the system that they've created. And if you drill down, I think it's the bare bones of what they're trying to create in 2028 and going forward. And you also had plenty of stars this week, being the perfect example. This was the perfect way of doing it. Let's don't forget, Colin Morikawa won Pebble Beach in a very dramatic way as a superstar player. So we had everything in between. Before last night, I had it scribbled into my notes that it was going to be the RBC Heritage that stood out to me. I covered that event, what Matt Fitzpatrick was able to do against Scotty Scheffler coming down the stretch. I would argue that what he did in the playoff hole, they only played one playoff hole as well, but Fitz hit what was a perfect 209-yard shot with just a brutal win coming off of Calabogie Sound, and just really a walk-off, just one of those type of victories. I'm not quite sure if I can do that now, because what you had might have been just as good, just for maybe different reasons. But the signature events delivered for what they wanted them to be. You wanted the star players together more often on these iconic golf courses. Now you need to take that and times it by two and a half, maybe, going into 2028.
Yeah, I don't think, like there were some hits and misses, not necessarily because of the winners, but just a couple of them are blowouts. You know, Jacob Bridgman, although it got tight at the end.
Cam Young at Doral was a blowout, but it was a dominant performance.
Cam Young, that's what you want to see. You want to see one of the world's best players in the best form of his career make a statement. That's what Cam Young certainly did at Doral. But I think he also had a good mix. You had Akshay Bhatia, remember, with the late reversal over Boog Knight. Daniel Berger at Arnie's Place, I thought that was great. I'm with you as well. Chris Raitt was a great surprise. JT Poston was a great surprise, beating Ryan Gerard at Jack's Place as well. I think overall the series still works, but I think they're also going in the right direction for 2028. You need to expand these fields to 120. You need to take out the idea of sponsor exemptions. If these are supposed to be the best tournaments on the PGA Tour, you can't be having guys having free passes into it. You can't be having limited fields. It's too needlessly condensed when you should be showcasing the depth of the PGA Tour. You should be showcasing the idea that the JT Postons, the Chris Raitens, and the Jacob Bridgmans of the world can still out-duel the very best in the tip-top of the PGA Tour. One thing I did want to point out, Rex, I asked Brian Rolopp, the CEO of the PGA Tour, after his scrum last Tuesday, when he was sort of announcing the unveiling of a change for 2028, I asked him, will there be anything that you're going to be unveiling in 2028 sprinkled into the 2027 schedule? Namely, the idea of sponsor exemptions in the signature events or the field sizes at signature events. He said, no, what you see in 2026 is what we're going to see in 2027. Isn't there an inherent problem to that? If you do have sponsor exemptions or you do have limited field sizes at the signature events, because if all of this new competitive model is starting in 2028, isn't then the top 90 from the 2027 PGA Tour FedEx Cup points list? Aren't those the players who are then going to be on this gilded path for success in the championship series?
I get where you're going with this, and it's not a bad idea. I wouldn't say it's out of left field at all, because you're beginning something that's very important with a flawed philosophy, to your point. That are the top 90 coming out of 2027 really going to be the top 90 players for all the reasons that you just pointed out? I will come to Brian Rolapp's defense a little bit, and he doesn't need me to defend him, but a lot of this is contracts that are written, that are already written in. A lot of this are established deals that to change now, and I think he probably learned that over the last year since he was introduced to last year's Travelers Championship, that he wanted to do this starting in 2027. He wanted the big turnaround to happen then. And to try to build the plane while it's in the air is extremely difficult. And on this front, and I've made this argument before, there are 30-something PGA Tour events. That means there's 30-something title sponsors and almost as many presenting sponsors and as many contracts as you have with each golf course. And then you factor in the foundations. There are a lot of mouths at the table. And all of them want to get fed. And I think that's what Brian Rolapp has learned over this last year. Yeah, it's going to be a problem. And I think that's the starting point of the conversation now. We know the general outline of what he wants to do in 2028 and beyond. How do you get there? How do you make sure that you're starting with the best 90 players and then work that out to however you get to 130, because that's going to be the magic numbers based on what they want to do for field size. How do you make sure that you're starting in the position where people don't raise eyebrows? How do you make sure that you're not starting somewhere where people are going to be like, well, no, you're flawed right from the beginning. How are you going to get this right?
I mean, you have to start at some point. And so that's sort of their, that's sort of their excuse or the rationale or the reasoning. However, if it were me, you need to just expand the field of the signature events and not have sponsor exemptions. That's the easy way to get around this problem, but it doesn't sound like they're going to be doing that for 2027. And talking to a lot of players and caddies this week, Rex, at the Travelers Championship, there's two things that really stand out that need to be addressed by the Future Competitions Committee as they actually go through the details of what this model is going to be like. We know the framework. I think every reasonable person thinks the framework actually sounds pretty good. But as they always say, the devil's in the details and they really need to figure this out. One is the schedule cadence. How are you going to cram 23 to 24 really big events, including the major championships, including the playoff events, including a cup event? And what's roughly going to be, I don't know, a 32-week window? Where do you put the off weeks? How, or sort of which of those 20-plus million-dollar events gets squeezed by players needing to take a break? That's one thing to figure out. The second one, though, is eligibility. And this is so messy and it's so confusing and every player is different. For example, Wyndham Clark is exempt now on the PGA Tour through, I believe, at least 2029 by virtue of his U.S. Open win in addition to his other PGA Tour wins, such as the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson. So what happens if you're Wyndham Clark and you have a poor season in 2028? Are you still exempt on the championship series for the next couple of years? Do you get relegated to the Challenger Series because technically you're not among the top 90 anymore? Like those sort of exemptions, those career achievements, tournament wins and those sort of exemptions, those are so confusing for players. Everyone's going to be different. But again, you're coming from a pool of 120 to 130 players, which is the magic number for the PGA Tour. So not just do you have the 90 who are the top finishers in the FedEx Cup, then you have these players who might be exempt because of major exemptions. Then you have players who might be exempt because they just won the PGA Tour. Then you're trying to bring in the players from the DP World Tour. Is that going to be 10? Is that going to be 5? Is that going to be 3? Is that going to be 1? You also want to create a pathway for PGA Tour U. Is that going to be 1 player? Is that going to be 3 players? Is that going to be 5 players? You want to create a pathway for them as well. In addition to what is now the Korn Ferry Tour, what's the slash the Challenger Series. Like, you can see how this can get really bogged down and very confusing. But I do think, Rex, the sort of the eligibility is the real sticking point for a lot of PGA Tour players. They're very interested, obviously, in seeing how it shakes out.
And it seems clear at this point that Brian Rolapp pushed this through. As difficult as this probably was, this is expedited based on the way the PGA Tour and golf normally moves. I'm not going to say he did it with an iron fist, but I'm sure inside that room, and I have heard that there were board members who weren't happy with many things along this policy, and yet he willed it into existence, I think is fair to say, alongside Tiger Woods, which also helped in this situation. It is my understanding that those exemptions you're talking about for career wins or career achievements, maybe 300 cuts, whatever the case may be, for winning major championships, that those will still be written into the priority rankings, which is how you fill out fields. But they're not going to be as long as we have right now. For example, if you win a major championship, it's a 5-year exemption. If you win a signature event, that's a 3-year exemption. I would not think that we're going to have 5-year exemptions at all anymore. As a matter of fact, I think 3 is probably the top end, and you work your way backwards simply because they want turnover. They want this to be as meritocratic as possible. And that means that the top 90 is going to be the golden number, and then everything else is fed in from below, not above.
Yeah, and I have no problem with the PGA Tour becoming sort of a what have you done for me lately league, which really puts it in line with every other team sport.
Every other sport.
Just because the Seahawks just won the Super Bowl, they're not all of a sudden starting with a 3-0 record when we get to the fall in 2026. Yeah, Brian Rolapp, it does seem pretty obvious that he pushed this one through, because the TV partners don't care about these eligibility concerns. They don't care if now Max Homa is going to be on the championship series for another year because he's exempt because of his PGA Tour wins, or if he's relegated to the Challenger Series, for example. And so, we know the framework, and now it's up to the TV partners and the TV deal, which is supposed to be 2030, but trying to push that ahead of time to get ahead of the NFL deal. All right, Rex, it is July 4th weekend. Your house is under construction. What is going to be on the grill?
I'm living on this porch now, so it's going to be a bunch of stuff on the grill. I did some chicken last night. I think it's really hot, as anyone who lives in Florida can attest. It feels like 100 and something. So I'm not quite sure how much time I want to spend out here, but it's been a minute since I did a pork butt. How about you?
It's going to be a historic heat wave. In fact, I just saw on Thursday and Friday in Cromwell, Connecticut, where I just was for the Travelers Championship, it's going to be 101 degrees. Yes, it's going to be hotter in Connecticut, and it's going to be in Florida or Georgia. I'm actually doing a seafood boil on Friday for a friend's birthday. And then Saturday, as is custom, I will be doing some ribs on the pellet grill. My son loves them. My 4-year-old daughter does not. So I'll make her some hot dogs and hamburgers, and everyone should be happy. We'll have videos on the Monday show, because yes, we will not be preempted next weekend, I guess, unless the John Deere Classic goes into a Monday finish and therefore we're going to get booted again. Jackson Koivin, Jordan Spieth, among those, we're going to be teeing it up this week at TPC Deer Run. It's always a fun event and always has a pretty good finish as well. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Joe Podcast with Rex and Lav. Thanks for putting up with our new locations. Thanks for putting up with me all week, the Travelers Championship coverage. Again, as a reminder, Rex and I will be back on Sunday night for a recap of the John Deere Classic, anything else that happens in the world of golf. If you want to be a part of the show, make sure to comment in the YouTube comment section. Leave us a question for the Voices in the Crowd section. We'll probably also have a Love It or Lav It. We'll have to fill it out in what could be a pretty slim week on the PGA Tour. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys on Sunday evening. Have a great July 4th, wherever else it is that you're celebrating.